Are we recording? No, too much. Hey everyone, welcome to Dex Watch Together. I'm Josh.
I'm Kylie.
And on today's episode, we talk about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can.
Spins his web. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Look out. Here comes Spider-Man. I like in Spider-Man 2 the runner of the Chinese lady who's just playing it, like finger picking it on a fiddle or a violin. It's a violin. It's not a fiddle.
What's the difference between a violin and a fiddle?
Great question. If you want to answer that question, that's question of the week this week, everybody. If you want to tell us what the difference between the violin and a fiddle is.
Just how you play it.
I don't really know.
Okay, Josh.
Yeah, what's up?
Since I just asked my question of the week, do you have a question of the week?
Do I have a question of the week?
Week.
Of course. So we all know that Spider-Man Homecoming is based around a high school event. Homecoming.
I mean, there is...
Kylie, what would be the best pair of superhero and high school event for, like, the name of a film? Like, Punisher Chess Club.
Do you have your answer?
Mine was Punisher Chess Club.
Oh, man. That's a good one.
Because I just wanted the Punisher to be like...
Checkmate!
He, like, teams up with, like, a chess club, and then
Because he's gotta, like, find, like, the corruptness in the chess... The other
and then, like, he has to teach them how to be a little bit more street, and they have to teach him how to be a little bit more chess club, and by the end of it, it's like a giant chess game with, like, guns and stuff at the end, and they're like, no, Punisher, you gotta move your rook to three! And he's like, it's time for the king!
I want to set mine around a school play.
Okay, great.
But I'm really trying to think of what superhero would be the most uncomfortable there.
Hulk.
I was thinking
school Hulk.
School
play.
Because, like, man, there were times where we were on the verge of hulking out. And then perfect. So, okay, so they put up the school play, and he's all calm, and then it's tech week, right?
Yep.
It's tech week. And then he hulks out, he destroys the set and everything, and then he has to make amends, and the kids have to come together to fix it.
Love it. Love it. There you go. Friends, if you want to tell us what your best combination of a superhero and a school event is, you can do so on iTunes, where you can leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to our podcast, as well as on Apple Podcasts if you have newer Fandangly systems that use Apple Podcasts now. Also, you can do this on friendoffriendpodcast.squarespace.com on this episode or on Facebook at Friend of Friend Podcast. Join the conversation. Tell us what's the best combination of a superhero and a school event. On with the show! Excelsior!
Well, let's take a moment. Okay, so, serious moment. So, Joanne Lee, the wife of Stan Lee, recently passed away, and I just want to take a moment to kind of honor her life, because she was one of the people that really encouraged Stan Lee to be, to really put out his own work and to create a lot of the characters that he did. And so, while Stan Lee was the creator of it, she was the one behind him encouraging it. And without her, we don't know where we would be within the comic book world and if these characters would exist. So I just want to take a moment to thank her for her encouragement to Stan Lee's work.
Well, and I believe, too, that she had said that... Stan Lee had said that she's kind of the visionary that gave him the idea for the Fantastic Four. So, I mean, I just think it's a really special relationship, and it's really, really sad that she has passed on, but moving forward?
Moving forward.
All right. Kylie.
Yes.
You saw it twice. Because you were like, I don't want to see it with you guys. Then you did see it with us.
Well,
I was like,
no. Someone else was like, hey, because we were going to go as a group, but then someone else was like, hey, do you want to go see this movie with me? And I thought, you know, going and seeing it with one person rather than five people would work out, because the other four people would still have people to go see it with. they wouldn't be alone.
Yes, but then other people were like, we don't want to go. So then now we had to go, and then we went again. So you saw it twice. You have seen the Spider-Man Homecoming twice, Kylie.
Yes.
Are you good with that?
Yes. Well, so just to have a little disclaimer, I walked in late for the first one. I didn't really know why the Vulture was doing what he was doing. There wasn't much motivation, and so I was like, there might be something here. And then I watched it entirely.
And you're like, oh yeah, those first 5 minutes are quite important to the Vulture's motivation.
Motivation. He's not just an evil guy doing evil things.
He could be, though.
He could.
Kind of is.
Yeah, but I know kind of why. Like, they set it up like, this is why he's doing it. But then after that, it's kind of like, now he's just doing it to be evil.
Yeah, we can get more into that a little bit later. But I do feel like his motivations are, though solid, like, this is one of the better Marvel villains in a while. I still am not totally satisfied because I think in the middle of the film it takes a real large leap to him being kind of petty criminal to murder man.
Just, you know.
And so I'm like,
one was an accident. It was an accident.
Yeah, but then beyond that accident, it was like...
It was an accident.
So, okay, yes. Let's start with where we usually start with. What were our expectations?
Before we even do that, let's give a little bit of history, because we have some history with Spider-Man.
Oh, that's fair.
I did not read much of Peter Parker Spider-Man as a child, because I wanted to read about girls, and Spider-Man wasn't.
It's true.
And so I tended to cling on to things like, Batman, because with Batman I got Batgirl and Wonder Woman and things like that. And I didn't actually... Spider-Man, I read a lot of the Marvel, like, big events, so like Age of Ultron and Civil War, and so Spider-Man does appear in those. And I like Spider-Man when he's part of those, but I never really read much of Peter Parker solo Spider-Man. I'm actually much more familiar with Miles Morales than Peter Parker.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Spider-Man has been my favorite superhero. Peter Parker Spider-Man is probably the one that I've read the most of. It's been a long time since I've read it, and in the 90s what was popular was the Clone Saga, and the Clone Saga is not the best thing in all of the land. So that's kind of what I was growing up with, but I really latched on to a lot of Venom, a lot of Carnage. Doc Ock was really great. And so I read a lot of 80s and I read a lot of 70s kind of era Spider-Man. And then kind of moving forward, I did read the 90s stuff. And then recently I don't have enough time to read comics. So I do other things with my life, which is sad, but I still love comics. But Spider-Man's my guy. So I have always had really high expectations for this hero and really high expectations for this property, especially considering in 2002 when Sam Raimi's Spider-Man came out, that was kind of like me being at the height of my love of Spider-Man, and I was in high school and I was just really ready, and I was like, yes, Spider-Man can save the genre, and it was really great. So just continuing my love of Spider-Man, I have a long history with this character and very much love him.
Very nice. My expectations going into this film, I really enjoyed Spider-Man in the movie Civil War. We do only get him for 2 scenes, but I think that they were actually very good with the character, and it was a good introduction to Tom Holland as Spider-Man. And so I was like, this is going to be a good movie. It was going to be a fun movie, but I didn't know how much I was going to enjoy it, because I wasn't sure how much of an origin story they were going with, and how... I was kind of like, if Sony's involvement's in this, there are 6 writers on this, there was a lot of things on this that I was kind of like, the second poster had like 12 Tony Starks on it, and...
They're like, guys, did you know Iron Man's in this? Did you know Iron Man's in it? Iron Man's in it. Iron Man. But Iron Man. Oh, you don't know Iron Man? What about Tony Stark? Tony Stark's here. Oh, but Robert Downey Jr. Did you know? Guys. Iron Man's in it. It's great. I think Sony was just excited. They're like, we get Iron Man. You guys. We get Iron Man. We get Iron Man. You guys. Yes, per usual, as with our... newer episodes, we'll do a spoiler-free section and a spoiler section. So, there you go. I guess whatever's in the trailer, which for Spider-Man Homecoming is apparently everything. So I saw the first trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming and I was done because I knew that, like, based on that, Sony was going to just give out pretty much the entire plot arc of the film, which it did and it didn't at the same time. There's stuff in here that's definitely a surprise, but so I stayed away from almost all advertising for this film. I knew I wanted to see it. My expectations were...
I watched the trailers, but I didn't go and... I don't seek things anymore because I, like, no longer have hope of, like, surprises and disclosures when, like, if you go and look up the cast list, it's like, oh, okay, I guess Jumanji's in this. That's weird.
Jumanji, the person?
Great. Jumanji, I couldn't think of a person.
Jumanji the person. No, yeah, absolutely. I guess Jumanji's in this.
Jumanji is my answer for almost every...
Have you seen the new Jumanji trailer?
I have.
I have not. I figure I'll see it in theaters at some point. That's when I watch this stuff. Unless, like, it's really... Just here it is, right in my face.
Here, I can get it right now
it's
for
fine.
You.
It's fine. It's fine.
Josh, watch it! It looks like a movie!
Oh, good. Not like a television show. That's good.
You know what trailer didn't look like a movie?
What?
Amazing Spider-Man 2, but we'll get there.
My expectations for Spider-Man Homecoming were excited, but tepid, I guess is kind of how I want to put that. I was very nervous that this film wasn't going to live up to the expectation that was set, or to the character that was given to us in Civil War. Civil War, I think, was a really good... quick bit of this Spider-Man character, and considering Sony hasn't made a good Spider-Man movie since 2004, I was worried. I was like, well, Marvel did what it was going to do. Marvel and Disney did what they were going to do with him and theirs, and now that this is pretty much just a Sony film, all right. But then I kind of did some research after figuring out some things that are how they actually get to use the character, and I have a little bit more faith in the franchise now. So, but yeah. On that note, so how Marvel is actually able to produce Spider-Man films that are in the MCU is as such. The only thing that Sony has to do with it is distribution and marketing and profit. Marvel does everything else. So what Marvel essentially in the agreement is they're the production company, they're the studio, they're the creatives behind it. Sony has final say. However, Marvel is still the company that's in charge of all of that. And then essentially, Sony gets delivered a completed film and they have to market it and distribute it. And that's pretty much their agreement. So that's how they can use Spider-Man in the MCU, which is good for Marvel because Marvel, the company, which is owned by Disney, is definitely starting to do things that are like they're phasing out some of the X-Men and they're phasing out some of the Fantastic Four. And so I would be sad if they started phasing. I mean, they can't phase out Spider-Man because he's their most popular brand. However, I'm sure they would have found ways. So, but yeah, there's also going to be individual Spider-Man universe films, which are not going to be MCU related. Those are just Sony, completely Sony. Those I still think will still be trash.
Aunt May solo film.
It's not on the table anymore, Kylie.
What?
The only thing that's announced is a Venom film.
With Tom Hardy. Who's he going to fight?
Carnage.
Who's Carnage going to be? Matthew McConaughey? Like, what are we really doing anymore? Yeah, let's just give up.
So, Spider-Man Homecoming. I think fair to say we're both generally pretty positive on this film. Nice. I think it's been a while since we've been positive on a film on this podcast, so huzzah! On a new film. On a new film.
Yeah, I was real negative about Josh. Like, stupid shark wouldn't work. Ugh!
I mean, I know. You went to town on it. Alright, let's talk about the film. Let's talk about what works, what doesn't work, thoughts, general opinions. Go, Kylie, go. Overall thoughts.
It was good.
Great. That's what we do on this podcast. One word reviews.
That was three. It was good.
I feel like some of those are prefaces. Your review is just
good. Was good!
Oh,
nice. I thought it was actually, okay. Let's think here for a second. I think that there are a lot of really strong elements about it, specifically Tom Holland. I think that he really understood his character of being Peter Parker in Spider-Man. It's very different from the Spider-Man that we get from the Sam Raimis, which is also okay. It's good. It's okay to have different Spider-Man. Different different takes on the character. And I think that within this movie, he did a really good job. I thought that some of the female characters were actually pretty weak in this movie. Zendaya's character wasn't very strong. Melissa Tomei's character wasn't very strong. They didn't really have characters, and you can make the argument they're building to something greater. That's a statement, but you can also give characterizations and give more things for them to do within this movie. We were talking briefly about Michael Keaton's villain. I think that it is one of the strongest villains we've seen in the MCU for a very long time. Though still not spectacular. There's still a lot of it just missing. But I do think that this was a great film. It's not the straight up I'm an origin movie, but it does take a lot of the pieces from past Spider-Man movies and puts it into here. And so, like, there are times where it's like, oh, I've kind of seen this before, but it's a little bit new and different.
I think I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think the film on the whole is positive, is very positive. It might still debating on back and forth, because as I've said all summer long, I still need to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 again, and I now want to see this one again, too. It might be... definitely the strongest Spider-Man film since 2004. It's definitely a very good film.
Yes, it's better than Amazing Spider-Man.
Spider-Man 3 Amazing and Amazing Spider-Man 2? Yes, absolutely.
I haven't seen Spider-Man 3, but I assume it's better.
Yeah. It's a good time at the movies, which is what it needs to be. A Spider-Man film doesn't need to be more than a good, adventurous time at the movie that has some twists and turns that you can generally see coming, but also you don't. And so I think what's interesting about this film is that, as Kylie said, it pieces together bits from all the other previous Spider-Man films, because while it does feel fresh, it also, there's a lore and a mythos that it has to play in, and there are some areas that it really needs to stick and stay in, and it does that while making it feel really fresh and new. And I think how it does that is it takes Peter Parker and makes him a very contemporary teenager. He feels like he's from 2017, and that's a great thing. And I also think it does that with the supporting characters. Flash Thompson is still a bully, but he's very much a 2017 bully, you know, and
he's the unconventional Flash.
Yes, exactly.
Which in the first
two
takes of Spider-Man,
we just get some random 28-year-old being a typical bully.
Yeah. Who's like the strong, muscular, like, I just want to beat you up. While Tony
Ravioli.
That's not his name, though. And I'm trying to break the cycle. Zero.
Ravioli.
He really tries to,
I think he's good in the film.
Mm-hmm. He's much more... his bullying is much more of a verbal and...
yes, absolutely. And he's not totally supported in it. Like, there's no... he doesn't have... like, he's not treated poorly because he's a bully, but also there's not a lot of people being like, dude... like, there's people that are questioning why he's doing it. So, that is a true story, too. I think his friends work really well. I think this character of Ned, which seems like an amalgamation of a couple comics characters, works really well to give him a partner. His relationship with Tony Stark in the film. And one of the things that I can say is that Tony Stark doesn't take over the film. This is definitely not an Iron Man film.
He may take over the poster, yes, but he doesn't take over the film.
It's very much a Spider-Man story, even that just happens to have Iron Man in it.
And Iron Man being in there feels very natural based on what we know from Civil War.
Yes.
It doesn't seem out of place. Like, why are you part of this? It feels like it feels natural to what we have seen before.
Interestingly enough, there is... so Jon Favreau's Happy Hogan shows back up for the first time since Spider-Man 2, I'm pretty sure.
Spider-Man 2?
I don't remember
Spider-Man 2?
Sorry, Iron Man 2.
Okay, I was like, sorry. Jon Favreau's in Spider-Man?
Sorry, Iron Man 2. I don't remember if he's in 3 or not, and if he is in 3... oh, he is in 3. He has a part in 3. Never mind. So he shows up for the first time since Iron Man 3. And he was the only one that felt initially like, why is he getting a bigger role in this film? Like, that was the only sort of, like, thing that seemed ham-handed at first. But then as the film went along, I was like, okay, I get it. I understand why this character's here and what you're doing with it. I think the film opens up really strongly with good ways of introducing all the characters, good ways of introducing the modern world, how he has his powers. I appreciate the fact that it is an origin story. To say this film is not an origin story is not true.
It's not an origin story like Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes, but what it does really well is it listened to us as an audience that have said, we've seen Ben Parker die. We have seen the Waynes die. We know popular superhero origin stories.
It's a fixed point.
They pretty much are. Like, in terms of this universe, they're fixed points. We understand that that has happened because you've showed it to us several times before. And not just you've showed it to us in comic form. In the mainstream cinematic media, we understand the origin story of Spider-Man. We don't need to see it again. But what this is it's a really wonderful origin story for this Spider-Man. He's not great with his powers yet. He's still got to learn how to figure things out. He's definitely still a kid exploring. We see him making choices in that. We see him figuring out what it means to be a hero and all of those things. So we're not dealing with that same arc, which is told so well in the first Spider-Man and so poorly in Amazing Spider-Man, in The Amazing Spider-Man. But we know that arc. Whatever version you like of that arc, we know it. We don't need it. But this is still an origin story. Mm-hmm. And we still get to see him rising to power within the cinematic universe. And with him being more comfortable as Spider-Man.
It's an origin story in the sense that this is him truly becoming Spider-Man.
Yeah. Some of my issues with the film are definitely involving the female characters, as you said. I don't think there's a single one of them that is a fully fleshed out, functioning character. The relationship between Peter Parker and Aunt May bothers me. Like, to an extreme. Really, really hurt this film. Not that Marissa Tomei is doing anything poor. I think she is doing the character that she was written to do. But
they don't take time with it.
They don't take time with it at all. And that is such a core relationship to Peter Parker. And the film at times wants us to understand that this is a core relationship, but it never shows it to us.
And it ends, like, all of the scenes that we get with them are just these, they end with jokes. They don't end with, like, an emotional beat. I mean, like,
the more familial relationship is actually with Iron Man, with Tony Stark, who is, see, this is another one of my issues. So I think that for the first time, Robert Downey Jr. feels like he's kind of bored with the Tony Stark character. Not that he's poor or bad or hurts the film, but he seems like he's going through the motions. And with that being said, then there's some dialogue that he's given that doesn't really work, because there's a whole, like, Tony Stark dealing with his father issues thing that feels out of place in this film because it doesn't feel warranted on both sides. It doesn't feel like Peter Parker is searching for a father figure in any way. So I just think there's some missed opportunities in the film in terms of the relationships with Tony Stark and others in comparison to the Peter Parker character, and that kind of hurts it a little bit. I think it was more focused on, and again, not a bad thing to be more focused on this, but it's not a complete film. So I think it's more focused on relationships between Peter and his friends and how, and really explaining who Peter Parker is, than actually diving into any sort of relationship with any of the adult characters in the film.
That's very fair.
Yeah, and then other things that maybe before we get to the spoilery section that I wanted to talk about, you mentioned the relationships with women and how there's not a single strong female character in this film. Absolutely agree with that, including Liz Allen and Michelle MJ. Anyway, so those two characters and Aunt May are probably the three largest female parts in the film, and they're all just plot point services. Or in Zendaya's case, setting up for another film. So there is some elements of this that I don't really, that are just set up for other film, which makes it sad, because when you look back at the original Spider-Man and even Spider-Man 2, there is elements that set up for future things, but they don't feel like they're there for that purpose, or they go by so fast that you're not stuck on it. Zendaya's character, if we didn't know that she was fourth or fifth build in this film, and if we didn't know that she was moving forward going to be a bigger part of this franchise, there's no point to have her in this film. She's fun, she's a funny character, but that's about it. I don't care.
She feels like she's trying to be, like, sort of the, Ali Sheedy's character.
Ali Sheedy?
Yeah.
From Breakfast Club?
From Breakfast Club, yeah. Kind of character. Yeah, absolutely. The outside loner. But, like, it doesn't work within this film because she's not given anything to do and we don't really understand her relationship with Peter Parker or Ned, which, like, yeah. They're the closest thing she has to friends, but, like, and they give her all these scenes of her looking off as Tom Holland runs away, and you're like, oh, but that's all.
I mean, it's the whole setup of, like, does she know? Listen, he's not great at hiding the fact that he's Spider-Man sometimes, which is kind of funny. We haven't really even touched on the lead female of this film, which is Liz Allen, who is played by somebody who gets really, really terrible billing.
Laura Harrier,
who kind of is just... They're really casting a type for this Peter Parker.
Tall.
Very tall African-American girls. This is who this Peter Parker is. Just, he has this type. So, it's interesting that she is such a bland character. Like, we know pretty much nothing about her. We only see her through the male gaze. The only thing that she is a pretty girl that Peter Parker likes.
I mean, she has some motivation, and it's clear that she cares about, like, her future, because she's like, we gotta win this decathlon, because it's important for the future.
Right, and she's not saying that she's not smart, or that she's not... Mm-hmm. Oh. Is she a manic pixie dream girl?
For Midtown's School of Science and Technology.
Yeah, like, I mean, she doesn't fit all of the, like, visual, like, tropes of it, but I think in terms of she's just there to help Peter Parker overcome his shyness and his awkwardness and things like that. So I think that she may not be a full-on one, but I think she might definitely be at least related to that stereotype in some way, shape, or form. But she's a pretty dull character, and that's it. Those are the three main female characters, and it doesn't do any of them justice at all. So that is definitely a criticism of this film. I don't really care for the Vulture's costume design or anything like that. It's so hard to see except for those stupid green glowing eyes. You lose any time that he's in that costume, you lose Michael Keaton completely, because it's, to me, clearly all CGI, mm-hmm. And that means that there's not really any sort of... I think that the film does a good job of setting up why Michael Keaton is who he is, and it does a really good job of setting up why Tom Holland's Peter Parker is who he is, but it doesn't do a great job of why they need to be fighting by the end of this movie.
He needs to become Spider-Man, and this is his shot.
That's it. That's the reason.
That's why they're fighting. That's why Spider-Man goes and fights things.
Because he's got to.
Yeah.
But I think in more successful Spider-Man films and Spider-Man comics, you have... It's always more successful when...
Because with great power comes great responsibility, Josh!
I know.
That's why!
But that's not always the strongest of motivations when you clearly are setting up and you could have had a stronger relationship in the film. And we'll get into that into the spoilery section. There was something else that I was going to say about the film that was not spoilery. Kind of about the film culture in general. Meaning, so this film comes out, it's the second Marvel film of this year. There will be another one coming out in November, so we'll get one in May, July, and November. It is all leading towards Infinity Wars, which comes out next May. So between Civil War and Infinity Wars, we're going to get... We will have Guardians 2, we will have Homecoming, we'll have Ragnarok, and we'll have Black Panther before we even get to Infinity Wars Part 1, which is just called Infinity Wars, and there's a couple more in between that for Infinity Wars Part 2.
Most importantly,
which is not called that anymore.
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Is Captain Marvel before Infinity Wars Part 2?
I think so. I think it's...
it's the in-between.
I think it's a sandwicher.
Which is so... so anyway, we're all leading up to this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. Phase 1, 2, and 3 are leading up to whatever the new Infinity Wars title will be called, which apparently the Russo brothers say that we can't know the title until after Infinity Wars Part 1 because it is spoilery, so that it is not called Infinity Wars Part 2.
Squirrel Girl.
That's right. Avengers. Squirrel Girl.
Listen. Just imagine.
I'm imagining.
Okay. We got Thanos, he's got the gauntlet, right?
Uh-huh.
And then Squirrel Girl pops in, uh-huh. Army of Squirrels.
Uh-huh.
We can make her played by Anna Kendrick to get you more on board.
Great, love it, love it, love it.
And she defeats him with her brains, courage, and squirrels.
Love it, I love it all. All
right, Russo brothers.
Yes, do it. So, we all talk about in terms of we all talk about in terms of how superhero film goes, that it's kind of this generation's Western, where it's really big right now, but this bubble's going to pop. And at some point, superhero film is going to start to tank again and go down. And that's fine. It'll be a smaller genre again. I think that will happen at some point. And I think that we've taken an important step here in towards getting towards that popping. And it's not because Homecoming is a bad film. It's because Homecoming is actually a good film. It's probably a better than good film. What it is Homecoming feels like it's just another thing. Like, oh, look, we're getting more marketing for a Marvel film. Oh, look, here comes another Marvel film. It just feels like a cog in the machine right now. And I think we're going to be willing to go along with this machine. And Spider-Man Homecoming is a better than average Marvel film. It really is. It should be heralded up there in the top half, if not the top 4, 5, 6, maybe. I don't know. But, like, it feels like it's just another part of this machine moving along. And I think that Marvel has enough goodwill that after Infinity Wars, that we'll give it till Infinity Wars Part 2. You can kind of do whatever you want in there. But then after that, I think that's when the bubble's going to pop.
Well, because, like, what are the higher stakes that we can do after that point?
You know, and so you've got to and Spider-Man Homecoming 2, which I'm sure will have a different name, is the first film, announced film in Phase 4. So whatever is coming after will be here. I think that it's clear to me that Marvel is setting up Tom Holland as, like, this is why Iron Man shared the film with him. Like, here is a passing of the torch. It will happen to this because he's the youngest member. He's a newest member. He can kind of be the leader of all of it. So, I don't know. I think it's really interesting that this is good, but I don't know if it's really penetrating in the way that some of the other films have.
I mean, so as we get more and more just... superhero movies, there are some that are taking risks by kind of playing with different genres, and so Logan is essentially a Western, so they're playing within the Western genre while still being a superhero movie, and Guardians of the Galaxy was able to be a space opera, and
Winter Soldier
was like an espionage film, and so, like, they're playing within these other genres, which is what they need to, if these movies want to continue to be successful, they have to start playing outside of the genres. I mean, I know Deadpool is a really big one because it was much more of a comedy and breaking.
Something that's really nice and refreshing about this film is that it is just a superhero film. It's in the genre. It's not. I love the fact that this is not an end of the world story. It's a
beam in the middle of the world shooting into the sky.
Absolutely. Like, this is, it really, at the end of the day, is about Spider-Man trying to stop a heist.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
And I mean, we understand that there would be severe repercussions if he fails.
Yeah.
But it's not, everything's exploding, which is what Infinity Wars feels like it's going to be.
And I think there's a way to make that work, especially considering what we've been building to. But yeah, so I just think it's interesting that we're starting to get to a point where even for someone like me, and this is my favorite hero, and yes, I'm really glad that he's back in the universe, but it just feels like ho-hum, bump-a-dump, here comes another superhero film, and I don't want them to feel like ho-hum, bump-a-dump, here comes another superhero film. I think that this bubble popping I now agree that it will pop. Before, I was like, it could not. I think logic says it probably will, but I mean, if they do it right, I do not think they're doing it right anymore. I think they're oversaturating the market, and we will go with them until Infinity Wars Part 2, but then you might lose just down to your hardcore fan base for beyond that. Because your universe is going to be too overtly complicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's already starting to get... So they have their TV verse.
Right.
And they have... So, I mean, they're already... They're filling up a lot of markets right now, and it's like, I just need a breather real quick.
Well, I mean, I don't even watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore because it's just, it's too much. I had to choose essentially between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or any of the Netflix stuff, and yes, I'm also behind on the Netflix stuff, but I would rather watch that.
Mm-hmm. So in between the two Infinity Wars are Ant-Man and the Wasp
mm-hmm.
and Captain Marvel.
Okay.
And then... The second Infinity Wars, which isn't Infinity Wars. After that, it's Spider-Man Homecoming
which
sequel.
Which is the beginning of Phase 4.
And then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Right. There you go. And then Inhumans, which was announced, is no longer announced.
It's gone. But, like, their TV, they have Marvel's The Defenders, Marvel's The Punisher, Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, Marvel's Most Wanted...
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Yes. All right, I think that is in general. I like the film a lot. I'll give my rating. I just said it right there.
But how many octagons do you
get? How many octagons? Four octagons, right there.
Four octagons.
I don't know what that means, but ooh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll get more into stuff in the spoilery section. What do you think, Kylie? You ready for the spoilery section?
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Spoilers! 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 We're going to spoiler now! Spoilers! 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 There will be spoiling happening! Spoils! Spoils! Don't listen if you don't want to know anything about Spider-Man Homecoming! Spoilers! 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 Spoilers!
Pepper Potts is back!
Oh.
Sixth build. Maybe fourth. We're not sure.
I really, really disliked that she was in this movie. I know it makes zero difference to anything. However, I've never cared for Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts. She's not... It might be my favorite Gwyneth Paltrow performance, but it... I don't care for her as Pepper Potts. I don't need her in this film. It's one scene. It's one scene with, like, four lines. It's not a big deal.
They're gonna get married.
But this is the problem, though, is in Civil War and in Age of Ultron, we have been told that they are either, like, they're not seen together or they're on the outs, and now all of a sudden, here they are, like, oh, we're happy-dappy, boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-wee! And I'm like, I don't give two craps. Also, if Iron Man is your central focus of your universe, which he is, that's how you built it up, Marvel, then you can't just tell me off-screeny at the end of one of your films, like, oh, by the way, Pepper's back and you're supposed to care about her again. Yay! You gotta do some work. Sorry, I didn't like it. It was one of my very few, like, ugh, moments of this film.
So... Something I found interesting. So in this film takes place after Civil War, where essentially
mostly,
yeah,
it starts after the events of the Avengers, the first Avengers film, and then jumps forward mm-hmm. to the events of Civil War.
So in this film, people still have a pretty positive feeling about the Avengers, while essentially what we've seen is half the Avengers have gone against the government and were imprisoned. But yeah. People are still like, Avengers! Woohoo!
Well, what do you mean? Hannibal Buress was like,
this is a war... He might be a war
criminal. I'm pretty sure this is a war criminal, but I have to show these anyway. Like, I appreciated that a lot.
And that's the only line we get in regards to, like, eh.
Hannibal Buress was in two scenes, and I loved him both times. Anyway, yeah, it's interesting that is set up in that way, that, yeah, they're still pretty generally beloved, and they're generally trusted. And I mean, I get it because Iron Man took them over. Like, the ones who are not involved anymore. So it is just that team that was Iron Man's team. So,
yeah, we got Black Widow, we got Iron Man, we got Vision, Hulk and Thor.
There you go, right? Donald Glover was in this movie for some reason.
Okay.
Just continuing the cameo in of Community cast members, because that's pretty much all he has.
Yeah, so he plays Aaron Davis, which
is Miles Morales' uncle.
And so, like, I was like, are you... And so he claims that he has a nephew, and there's a scene where they're at the truck, and he's like, ooh, climbers? And so it's kind of like, oh, we might get Miles Morales. But...
That's it.
That's all we get.
Really. That's the purpose that it serves.
And it's kind of like, why are we doing this? He does have another scene where he allows Spider-Man to go and, you know, find where they're at and stuff. But that's all his character is really given. It's more of a stepping stone rather than a...
It's funny. Like, this scene where Spider-Man interrogates Donald Glover,
Daniel.
Shut up. Is a good scene, and it's just like one of those things where I think we've oversaturated Hollywood so much with stars that, or we have so many niche stars that's somebody who would be a character actor usually, and now it's Donald Glover, you know? And so, I don't know, it's interesting. He was wasted in the film. When he was announced, I had higher hopes that he would be a bigger part in the film and not just that, but, you know, is what it is. Okay, I want to talk about this earlier, and I think now we can, which is this whole idea that I feel that in an early version of this script, which there's six credited screenwriters, three credited teams on the film, so I think in an early version of this script, there was a lot more to do with Spider-Man trying to find a father figure to replace an Uncle Ben type character, because not only do you have that runner with Tony Stark, which makes it all the way through the film, you've got this scene. So the Vulture ends up being Adrian Toomes, I think is his name. That's the name in the comics, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if we ever hear his name in the film.
Michael Keaton.
Ends up being Liz Allen's, the girl that Peter Parker likes. It's her father. Big kind of spoilery reveal in the middle of the film there about that. Which, to me, was a cool reveal, but also like, oh, that makes sense. Like, I kind of saw that coming. Just because I've seen other Spider-Man films before, and I've read Spider-Man comics.
And I've seen a movie.
And, like, I understand that you're gonna want this to have some sort of connection to Peter Parker, and this is the easiest, quickest route. I've also seen other Spider-Man films before. You're just pulling elements from them. I get it. I understand what's happening here. But it seems like there's a scene in the car that we get, like, this one scene where he's all kind of freaked out and nervous, and it seems as if Peter is even more amped up than usual, that this guy is the Vulture. But it just seems that there was probably other scenes in earlier versions about Peter and Michael Keaton maybe forming some form of familial relationship that would have made that feel more emotionally impactful. Like, it kind of, as it was, ended up being surprising, but it was not emotionally impactful. And if you wanted it to be, then you failed. And if you wanted any of the stuff with Iron Man as a father figure to be emotionally impactful, you kind of failed there too. I did appreciate that in our recent Spielberg series, we said that it was interesting that with Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones character, that he had issues with his father, then he had issues being a father, and it was never really addressed in any sort of way. Well, Iron Man has issues with his father, and now could have issues being a father, but it is addressed. So that does, like, solve a little bit of a problem, and I appreciate that it's being addressed, but it doesn't feel like it's being addressed in any sort of healthy way, because Spider-Man could give two craps about Iron Man outside of the fact that
he needs Iron Man to appreciate him so that he can then beat Avenger.
Yeah. I don't think that he needs any sort of, like, mentory. He doesn't seem like he needs a lot of mentory familial kind of relationship from Iron Man, which could have been developed a little bit more over time. And if all you're going to do is give Aunt May what you gave her, cut her from this film and spend more time with those two characters. And I get that I'm saying cut a female character to give more time to two male characters. However, you didn't give that female character anything to do anyway, except for just to exist. And I said earlier that
Peter Parker needs someone legally to live with, and that's what she feels
like. That's what she is. And literally, he could have been living on his own, and it would have made zero difference to this film.
Mm-hmm.
That is a frustrating thing to me in terms of I think that there was more going for a connection that just feels like some of the threads got dropped in all of this script changing nonsense. The other thing with Aunt May that really bothers me, so he calls her May through the whole film, like, except for maybe once or twice. Like, she's just this cool, young, hip May. She's not even Aunt May. It's like, just May. It's like, oh, and she's young, and she's hip, and she's kind of maybe with Tony Stark, and ooh, and I was like, this is not Aunt May. You're not giving me any resemblance of an Aunt May character. I'm not saying you have to go Rosemary Harris and be old, frail Aunt May, although that is what I always picture in my brain and what I think the character is.
We gotta give her some speeches, we gotta give her some monologues, that is the real Aunt May.
I mean, listen, as long as they're emotionally motivated, yes. Like, that's the thing, she's such an emotional core to Peter Parker's character that it really undercuts things when she's not that emotional core of this film. And that hurts the character a ton.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I'm like, I don't need her. I don't want her.
It seems like Aunt May cares about Peter Parker, but we don't get to see Peter Parker care about Aunt May very much.
No, the people that Peter Parker cares about in this film are Peter Parker, Ned, Liz, his friends, sometimes Iron Man.
When it's convenient.
So, I mean, but also that's a very modern teenager thing. Like, you care about your friend, your family and your parents, but also you show more affection for your friends.
I mean, this is also after a time, we don't know when Uncle Ben died, but...
Well, and
there is a line like, after everything that's happened, I can't tell Aunt May because, but it's kind of like, okay.
I don't even think Uncle Ben's name is said.
No. The only reference to him and his death is... after everything that has happened.
Right.
And so it's kind of like one of those things of, where, I don't need Uncle Ben again dying, but you know, there is some...
Yes.
There should be something there of some emotional feeling or whatnot.
It
should have a stamp on who Peter is and his relationship with
Aunt
May.
And the reason why some of this familial stuff doesn't work, why he's looking for a father figure, so to speak, is because we don't see that he cares about losing his, mm-hmm. whether it be his actual father or Uncle Ben. And so there is advantages to jumping past the origin story, the original origin story, but there's also some disadvantages if you don't take the time to, you know, figure out and set up why and how it died. You know, and that's a frustrating element of this film, definitely, is the handling of Aunt May in general, and the lack of even recognition for Ben Parker, you know. Even though he doesn't need to be in this film, him having a small presence in the film wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Like, even, like, I don't know, he looks at a picture or something, and then he feels sad for a minute, like, anything like that, but there's nothing about this in this film that shows that it had any effect on him, and that it had any effect on his relationship with Aunt May. Like, because Uncle Ben's death in at least the other two Spider-Man series are what motivate him to go out and stop crime, but this one, it's kind of like, he just wants to do it to be, like...
So, we don't know what Spider-Man is doing before. We know he has powers, and we know that he's using it to create videos. Oh, there's a great video. I love a film by Peter Parker that starts it. That's a wonderful sequence. But there is... We know that he's at least showing off his powers on YouTube, because that's how Tony Stark finds him.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know if he's fighting crime. We don't know anything that has happened in the previous two, when Uncle Ben died. Or we don't even know if Spider-Bite... We don't even know if that his Uncle Ben's death is related to that at all. I'm not saying that we do need to know any of that. I mean...
All we really know is that sometime before Civil War,
yeah.
Uncle Ben has died, and he has his powers.
Yeah, and we can assume, because we know things, that they're connected. And again, I'm fine with making that assumption, but you just have to give me a tiny, tiny little bit. Just let me know that they still care.
It's not too much to ask for, I don't think.
I don't either. And you might... There is definitely people out there who could be saying, like, oh, well, you guys are saying that you don't need it. No, you do need it. And I was like, I'm not saying that I need it full on. I'm not trying to have my cake and eat it, too.
I don't need to see the gun in Martha Wayne's face and it ripping off her pearls 6 times in the movie. What I am saying is I need to see some emotional arc with this movie, because I don't get much of an emotional arc, and no. It's bothersome.
No.
Because what makes the first two Spider-Men great is that there's an emotional arc.
Yes.
And there's not... This is
just a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very well... So this is my issue with trying to rank it in terms of either the Marvel Cinematic Universe or in terms of the Marvel films that have come out this year so far. It's a good time. And I enjoyed watching it more than Volume 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. However, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is more emotional. It's better directed. It's a better film in terms of, like, what makes a cinematic film and things that. But Spider-Man Homecoming is...
More enjoyable.
So it's that real, like, two-sided coin there of I don't know. And again, I do need and want to watch Volume 2 again to maybe... It comes down to expectations with that film, as I may have said before, but it comes down to I was expecting something more similar to Homecoming, and I got a smaller piece.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I know that it's a smaller piece, I feel like I want to go watch it again and enjoy it for what it is, you know? This was exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was a good version of it, but it was still exactly what I thought it was going to be. Any other things, thoughts, ideas you want to add in the spoilery section?
We didn't really touch much on Tom Holland's performance as Spider-Man and Peter Parker. I think we were like, yeah, it was good.
Okay.
And then we left it on that. What about it did you think was well done?
I think that... I liked the way that he felt real and honest with his performance, having worked with teenagers and you know, lived with teenagers. I think that what he does is represent that generation super, super well. He understands their speech, their dialogue, their the way they go about holding themselves. And yes, dude's 21. He was a modern teenager not that long ago. So it's not all that hard for him. I think what he does do well is he lets us care for this kid. And there are some definitely really wonderful emotional moments, especially when he's really trying so hard. Like that montage of the afternoon where he's saving and trying to be a good hero and just keeps not being it.
One thing that he's missing is saving a cat from the tree.
I know, right?
He saves one from the fire,
My favorite thing is that he helps this lady and then he's like, oh, she bought me a churro.
I shouldn't have said that.
And then I love that Iron Man later is like, yeah, go help the churro lady again.
Yeah, go help the old one.
Like, that's a good little runner. I think Tom Holland is just good at being a kid and showing this youthful exuberance.
And also discovering... Also, like, he reacts like a normal kid. Like, in some of these superhero movies, when, like, someone pops out something extraordinary, they're just like, huh. But then, like, Tom Holland's like, what the crap is this? What is happening? And that felt very realistic because I'm like, that's exactly how a kid would react. Like, what is all of this? And I think that he does play a younger Peter Parker.
Well, and in comparison to... So, I think we have 3 now mainstream Spider-Mans with Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire. And Andrew Garfield is clearly the worst of them. That doesn't even seem like a Peter Parker character when I watch it. And I think Tom Holland is great at showing a high school teenage Spider-Man and Peter Parker. And Tobey Maguire, though not the comics Peter Parker, by very, like, he is to a small, but not by any real stretch of the imagination is he a comics Peter Parker, but he's a very good young adult version of Peter Parker, even though Spider-Man 1 takes place half in high school. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that we've got these two with Tobey and Tom Holland. There's two very different versions that I think both work very, very well. And that's what I'm saying, is that if you understand the essence of a character, you can absolutely be good. He understands that at his heart, you know, Parker's a kind kid, but he's also a snarky kid. And he's very much wants to do things on his own. And that's where his independence comes from. And there's a little bit of angst that goes along with that. And I don't think there was a lot of angst in the Tom Holland character as much as there is in the Tobey Maguire character. But they're different, yet they both feel like Peter Parker, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of Tom Holland's angst isn't from growing up and isn't from being Spider-Man. His angst is getting the girl.
Yep.
Being popular in a very teenage angst, not the bigger picture sort of angst.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I definitely like about this film is it does that comic thing really well where it mixes real life problems with superhero problems. And that's I think what every successful Spider-Man film has done and the most successful Spider-Man comics have done is that it takes that idea and amplifies it. So, yeah, absolutely. Other performances that were good, Michael Keaton was great. I think he is, you know, not too over the top. He finds that pitch-perfect level. He adds a lot to a character, which I think there is depth given to that villain character, but it's not depth in connection to Spider-Man, which is a little bit of a harmful thing.
He gives as much depth as the script has allowed
him. Yeah, absolutely. And I think he even finds more levels to it because we can empathize and relate to him. Now, yes, there is some logic leaps that are made at the end of this film with all of a sudden, somehow, he figures out, based upon the thinnest piece of evidence, that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And yes, that's a problem. And he jumps very quickly from just a dude...
I'm gonna kill you!
Yeah, dude, like, salvage working with alien tech to, no, murder kid. And that those are problems, but those are script problems, not Michael Keaton problems. Mm-hmm. I think Keaton is really great. That being
said, had Peter Parker's relationship with Liz been more than 3 minutes, and had they been able to
with Liz or with Zendaya?
With Liz.
Okay.
Because he's Liz's father. If, like, we could see that longer, yes, and we could see his interactions with Peter Parker before it's, like, the big realization. Yes. That could have led into, oh, I've figured it out, but it's a real...
Yeah. That, you know, I think that Aunt May, I mean, Marissa Tomei, is not bad with what she's given. She's just not given much.
It's like they have, like, the scraps on the floor of what Sally Fields got, and they're like, well, just sweep those up and give them to Marissa Tomei.
She knows.
Oh, yeah.
She freaking knows. I cannot believe that this film ends with Aunt May finding out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. That can't be a thing! That breaks a fundamental... Nobody knows! Like, I was fine with Ned knowing. Like, I think that's good that he has a friend who knows and understands and he can be in this with. But that is a fundamental thing about Spider-Man, is that nobody knows who he is.
And I mean, Rosemary Harris has moments where it's kind of like...
Do you know?
But it's not a straight, like, Peter, I know you're Spider-Man. But, like, it's clear in the MCU that it is known.
Which, I mean, I guess is not, at the end of the day, the biggest deal. But it does... I don't know, I think it's really...
Well,
it's
unless you're going to use it and you're going to make their relationship into something, then... It's not... It feels worthless. Unless, like, in the future, they make it into... It builds their relationship, gives Marissa Tomei a character, then maybe it can be a good thing. But right now, I mean, it doesn't matter.
No.
Because...
We don't care about her. She's not given a character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, the performance is generally pretty good. I love the kid that played Ned. I don't know his name, per se, but he was great. And yeah, I mean, even the, yeah, I think the performances in this film are all very solid. Except for Gwyneth Paltrow. She was the worst.
She had like 4 lines.
Ugh, the worst 4 lines ever.
Alright, any final thoughts?
I like it. Go see it. Support the film. Spider-Man's back. It's great. Oh, there's not really any... My final thought would be this, is I said that Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a film where you can have a clear director's vision. John Watts does not offer a clear director's vision with this film. It's just a straight Marvel studio film. There's nothing really interesting or fascinating that he's doing with his camera or his pacing or his editing or his lighting or his sound or anything really that sets him apart as being a useful cog in this machine. So I guess good for that. You didn't get in the way, but you also didn't actively enhance the film at all.
Mm-hmm. I think that another thing that I appreciated about this film is that it, some of the other Spider-Man films center around the point of saving the girl while being part of the bigger picture.
Yes.
While in this, he does like this girl and he's trying to impress her, but it is not the main arc of his character and it's not his main desire. He has bigger hopes, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah. Wow. The kid who played, what was his name? Jacob. I looked him up for a second here. Jacob Batalon has 1 other credit. This is his 2nd acting thing ever.
Good job.
His other... Yeah, very good job, considering that's a true story.
Good job, Tony.
His other act...
Good job, Ned.
Yeah, right? His other acting credit is something called Northwoods, which is a horror comedy. Looks like it's spoofing the Blair Witch Project.
Great. The Blair Witch is a spoof of itself.
Listen, Kylie... All I'm saying is that if we were to watch Northwoods, we would be at 100% of Jacob Batalon's filmography.
All right, we gotta do it next episode.
And then every time he released another film, it'd be the easiest actor to watch all of his career.
I mean, that's fair.
What are your final thoughts, Kylie?
Good times. Really, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I absolutely
went and saw
did.
It twice. I don't know if I'd go and see Guardians of the Galaxy twice.
I did. I would. I want to see it again.
I know, Josh. You've only told me and the audience like 26 times.
But I don't know if they know yet.
Josh wants to go see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 again.
Did you guys know that? I don't know if you knew that.
Did you know that?
Nick, Barb. Guys, if you want to join this conversation, and why the heck would you?
We lost them already.
You can do so at friendoffriendpodcasts.squarespace.com. You can also do so on Friend of Friend Podcasts on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at
WTS_podcast.
YouTube.
Ducks Watch Together.
Tumblr.
Ducks Watch Together.
Letterboxd.
Darby ACT and Kylie Galisher.
You can also find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, where you have downloaded this and hopefully are enjoying it. And if you do so, leave us a 5-star review, as well as subscribe to our podcast. It helps other people know that you are watching us. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Josh.
I'm Kylie.
Quack, 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 quack.